In a world filled with possibilities and wonder, we can always find grace in between the music. Join me, Lily Maselli, host of In Between the Music, and enjoy trivia and music together. For dates and times, visit WGTD.org.
This is WGTDHD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Guida Brown, former executive director of the Hope Council, Dr. Steve Brown, retired professor of educational leadership and school law, Dr. Karen Sconsert, chair of the education department and associate professor at Carthage College, Dr. Jonathan Shaler, professor of communications at UW Parkside, and Stephanie Skilba, Vice President for Community and Government Relations at Gateway Technical College. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
And a very pleasant good morning, and welcome to this edition of Education Matters here on WGTD-HD. I'm your host today, Steve Brown, and I'm very pleased to welcome into our studios here in Kenosha, Donna Rhodes, who is Gang Intervention Supervisor for the Kenosha County Division of Children and Family Services. Donna, welcome.
Thank you, Steve. I'm very happy to be here.
Before we get into a discussion of what you do, what your job entails, the issues of gangs, maybe if you could first start with just telling our audience who you are. Who is Donna Rhodes? Where did you grow up? Where did you go to school? And how did you get involved initially with gang intervention and the work that you do?
You let me talk about myself. You better give me a time.
I will. And I promise I won't be, I won't have the clock going
okay.
Here.
Well, I was born in Milwaukee, educated in the Milwaukee Public Schools. I am one of six siblings, second in the line. I left Milwaukee and came down to UW Parkside right after high school in 1977. Parkside had just opened. It's a beautiful, beautiful campus. It was then and it is now. And I first started Parkside as an accounting major because I'm actually really good with numbers, and mm-hmm. I thought that was the path I wanted to go. Well, then econ hit me. That econ class was just so difficult. I realized I can love numbers and not be an accountant. So then I found myself in more social services classes. And when I looked up my senior year, I was, you know, a few credits from graduating with a sociology degree. So that was the path I decided to take. And then shortly after graduation, I was a new mom. I was pregnant with my first child when I graduated. So I didn't enter the work field right away. But eventually I did land at Professional Services Group and Community Impact Programs in Racine. At that age, it's a local private social service agency located in Racine and Kenosha. It is actually the largest social services agency that Kenosha County contracts with for youth justice and gang prevention services. So I started there in 1989 working with teen moms, youth involved in gangs, and also youth who are transitioning out of foster care into the independent living program. I left the Racine office in approximately 91 or 92 and came down to Kenosha and finished my career with Professional Services Group here in Kenosha, again, doing the same type of work, working with at-risk youth, working with youth transitioning back from out-of-home care, youth struggling with gang behavior and other delinquency behavior. And then in 2009, the county opened up a position called Gang Intervention Supervisor. I plan to retire from PSG. I love the agency then. I love it now. The former director, Dave Houghton, was a wonderful mentor for me for 20 years. And when I told him I wanted to leave the agency and take this position as gang intervention supervisor, he beat me down to the Kenosha County Job Center, giving a recommendation. So with his support, this position started, and I just felt like it was made for me.
I'll read a statement here, and this I got it off the internet, and it was on one of the federal sites with regards to gangs. And be thinking how you would react to what I'm going to say. Since the mid-20th century, gang violence in this country has become widespread. All 50 states and the District of Columbia report gang problems, and reports have increased for 5 of the past 7 years. Despite the steady growth in the number and size of gangs across the U.S. and the criminal behavior and violence they spawn, little is known about the dynamics that drive gangs and how to best combat their growth. When you hear what I just said, if you were giving a lecture to a group of students at UW Parkside in some social science class of any sort, how would you respond? How would you relate your experiences to what I just said?
Well, I think we do have the answer, and the answer is prevention. You know, you cannot start doing gang prevention or even delinquency prevention when kids get to middle school or high school. So we need to educate from a very young age kids to be resilient so that when they, not if they're approached to make a bad decision, whether it's gangs or drugs or sex, whatever it is, we have to give them tools so when they're approached to make a bad decision, they know that what your family values are, and they know that what will and will not be accepted in the family. And I think that education has to start right away when they are 2, 3 years old, far before they get to school age.
Mm-hmm. And with regards to that, you know, one of the questions I always like to ask my guest, and it may or may not have any direct relationship to gang intervention and everything we're talking about now and will for the next 30 or 40 minutes. But was there a teacher in your life at any level, at any grade level, or, you know, even at the university level, who truly had a positive impact on you, Donna Rhodes?
Well, there's Mrs. Fields from Wilbur Wright Junior High in Milwaukee. She was my home ec teacher. And, you know, I just learned so much from her, so much more than what she taught in the home ec class. I think of her often. My sister also had her as a teacher. And we tell Mrs. Fields stories all the time. And that was seventh grade.
share a story, if you would, about Mrs. Fields that comes to mind that would pertain to the impact she had on your life.
She was just always so kind. And she was, you know, when you're in seventh grade, you know, kids are, you're starting to develop, going through puberty and body issues and self-esteem issues. And here is this beautiful, black, well-dressed, articulate, kind person who came into this school, and she was just wonderful, loving to every student she touched. And she always made me feel special. I didn't even know my sister had the same experience with her until we were talking years later about how kindly Mrs. Fields treated us.
Okay. As you look at your current job as gang intervention supervisor, maybe if you could tell us about what that job entails. Please be as detailed as you wish, and there's no time limit on your answer.
Okay. What this job entails is providing gang prevention information to the community and rallying the community stakeholders, to address the gang problem. Everyone thinks the government always has money to throw at a problem. We don't have money to throw at a problem all the time. And what we need in terms of gang behavior, gang involvement in the community, we need strong neighborhoods, we need strong parents, we need resilient children. So part of my job is to do gang prevention activities to strengthen neighborhoods. We, our Kenosha County gang prevention slogan is, knowing your neighbors is gang prevention. So with that, I do a lot of community-based activities to get neighbors out, to know each other, to bond together, to, when you know who's supposed to be in your neighborhood, you also know who's not supposed to be in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And strong gangs or any kind of negative behavior cannot survive in a strong neighborhood. You have a gang house move into a neighborhood, and then suddenly all the neighbors are coming over saying, welcome, 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 welcome. They don't want that kind of activity. You're gonna, that kind of kindness, that kind of attention, that kind of neighborhood closeness will actually run a gang out of your neighborhood, mm-hmm. a gang house out of your neighborhood. The other thing I do is a lot of prevention. I want people to raise resilient children so that we don't put me out of work. I don't, if you want to put me out of work so we don't need game prevention anymore, there's no game, feel free. I'll be one happy soldier that day. So we want strong, resilient children that when they're approached to make a bad decision, like I said before, they will have the skills. We cannot expect kids to solve a problem if we don't give them the tools to solve it. So I do a lot of gang prevention working with Kenosha Unified Schools, and I can do gang prevention as young as third grade and never mention the word gang, because it's not about the gang. It's about the skills you need to avoid the gang. So I also, in my role as gang intervention supervisor, I oversee two gang prevention contracts. One is with the Boys and Girls Club, and the other is with community impact programs. These programs work with youth that have been identified by the school, by the parent, by the neighbor, by someone, even the police department, as potentially being at risk for gang involvement. The young people are given an assessment tool, and if they score a certain level on that assessment tool, then they are provided with gang prevention groups, other gang prevention programming, support in the school, monitoring attendance, following through with if a child is struggling at school, you know, what can we do to help them? How we can do tutoring groups. We can advocate in the school for different programming or an IEP. Maybe there's some special education needs that are unidentified. So our gang prevention programs, they do everything they can to strengthen these young people, educate them about the risk of gang involvement, and give them an alternative to gang involvement.
Mm-hmm. Are there any major differences based on your own experiences with regards to gangs, what they do and how they, I'll use the word, infiltrate a community? Any big differences between Kenosha County, Racine County, and Milwaukee County?
Huge differences, and that's because Kenosha has always been very progressive in terms of addressing gang problems. And that's why Kenosha does not have the huge gang problem that Racine, Milwaukee, Lake County has. Kenosha County has the longest sitting gang task force in the state of Wisconsin. It is a multidisciplinary group that has been meeting since the late 80s, Wednesday mornings, the second Wednesday of the month at 9:30 for decades now. And we bring together school resource officers, dean of students, principals, probation and parole officers, youth services people, youth justice probation officers. We don't call them that, but that's the easiest way to describe them. Mm-hmm. And come together to figure out, are there problems in the community that need to be addressed? Is there graffiti that needs to be identified? Are there youth that we see that are maybe climbing the ladder or becoming more concerning that we can refer to services, that we can connect with programming to avoid them getting in our youth justice system? Or if they get in there, how to get them out quickly?
Mm-hmm. One of the things that in the research that I have looked at, that on a national level, one of the factors that tends to get overlooked is that not all members of gangs are necessarily African Americans. Isn't that true?
Absolutely not. Yeah. I mean, there are gangs of all races.
Sure.
Absolutely. And people think they're not gangs west of the eye. There are gangs west of the eye. I had actually contacted the school this number of years ago. I had contacted Central and Wilmot and said, hey, can I provide services? They said, we don't have gangs. And I just smiled sweetly and said, yeah, you do.
Why is it then, do you think people in general, whomever they may be, think that gangs are African Americans only, where in fact, historically in this country, that is not true?
Well, I think that's a bit of institutional racism. I think that it's easier to look at an African-American child and see a potential problem, not always a problem, but you see a group of African-American children and the first thing you think is they must be a gang. I often get calls about there are kids in the middle of the street. Okay, what are they doing? They're in the middle of the street. Well, what are they doing? They're in the middle of the street. They're being kids. But when it's a group of black kids, it just becomes a lot easier to be scared. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a lot easier to pigeonhole into being a gang when a lot of times it's just a group of kids.
Mm-hmm. This article that I mentioned before we started, a guide designed to provide parents with answers to common questions about gangs to enable them, the parents, to recognize and prevent gang involvement. I just want to give this to you and just have you look at it and just respond to a few of those categories there. And but I'm sort of curious what your thoughts are there.
Well, there's a question here on why kids join gangs. And it oftentimes it says kids get pushed into gangs because they're afraid for their safety or they think gangs can provide protection from neighborhood crime and violence. Yeah, probably in bigger cities. But in smaller cities like Kenosha, it's just what kids do. I was talking to a young man at the Boys and Girls Club a few years ago, and I was trying to ask him why was he in a gang. And all he said was, well, if he doesn't like my friend, he doesn't like me. Hmm. And I just said, well, why? So what? And he just, with that conversation went on for 3 or 4 minutes, with him not being able to give me an answer other than, if you don't like my friend, you don't like me, and we have to fight. So I think that's why we need to educate kids younger. But this kid was about 16 years old. That was way young to be talking to him about gang prevention. That conversation should have been had about 10 to 12 years sooner. Mm-hmm. To talk about violence is not the way to solve problems. To talk about be your own man, be your own person. You know, you don't have to follow anybody. You don't have to go because they look cool. Or being clear with kids about what your family values are. If you are not clear with your family value, if you're not clear with your children what your family values are, then they would be, you know, susceptible to the first person to come around and say, hey, you want to do this. I raised 2 sons, and my late husband would always say, we have a gang. It's called the Rhodes Gang. And that was it. And those boys were clear with that. When they walked out of the house every morning, he said, who are we? And they had to repeat, the good guys. Because that was instilled in them from very young. We are the good guys. And we really need parents to do that a lot more often. Set that value system young so that when they're approached, they would know, oh, absolutely not. I'm not going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, one of the skills I teach parents is the 4 ways to say no. Because if kids don't know how to say no, it's real easy to say yes. And so we talk about, especially with young kids, the 4 ways to say no. You can change the subject. You can persuasively say, no, get away from me. You can walk away, just simply walk away. Go to an adult for help. So if someone comes to you to make a bad decision, we want to give kids those 4 tools to put in their toolbox to say, hey, okay, I taught this class one time, and I actually, a little girl, and I would have role play with the kids, and I would tell one of the little kids to say something naughty and have the other kids guess which tool she used, which one of the 4 ways. So the guy said, let's smoke a cigarette. And she said, I like pie. And everyone knew she changed the subject. Mm-hmm. And so if we don't give kids these kind of tools, they won't know how to say no. Or it would be a lot easier to say yes if we don't give them ways to say no.
Mm-hmm. How do we make sure that our classroom teachers, say in grades 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, regardless of whether it's east of the eye or west of the eye or wherever, how will teachers be able to do what you just talked about with the 4 ways to say no?
Well, we need to be observant, for one thing. You know, you want to look for changes in behavior. You want to refer out for services. We see kids all the time with extreme behaviors at a very young age. Why are those kids getting to 5th and 6th grade before there's any intervention? If you got a kindergartner getting suspended, you want to get that kindergartner some help right away. So by the time they get to 3rd grade, you won't have that behavior problem in your class. You know, doesn't matter how old they are, refer to services. We have wonderful, wonderful prevention services here in Kenosha. And all they have to do is contact the Prevention Services Network, for instance, and we can get some services connected to those families. Right now we have school-based therapy in KUSD. One of the greatest things I think that's happened to the district, where we have counselors in the schools that provide therapy during the school day. They have regular scheduled appointments, but also they're there for intervention. They're there to, if the kid is having a bad day, they're there to do assessments. They're there to do those interventions. They help kids stay in the classroom, get these issues resolved, and be able to continue to be educated. You know, I think we have wonderful KUSD teachers. I praise teachers highly all the time. You know, when I teach classes, I always tell parents, no teacher got in this field to target your kid, because that's what I hear a lot. Oh, the teacher just doesn't like my kid. No, you know, a teacher is not in a room with 30 kids every single day, and they pick yours out not to like. So I give teachers, you know, a lot of credit. When my boys were in school, you know, the teachers were stood.
Speaking of KUSD, you have just received the Courage to Care Award from the Hillcrest School. And I'll just read a portion of this news release that came from the Kenosha County from John Jansen, who's director of HR for, of Human Services for Kenosha County. To Kenosha County Gang Intervention Supervisor Donna Rhodes' work is dedicated to changing the lives of at-risk youth and setting them on the right path for productive adulthoods. And then in the second very short paragraph, it says, little did she, you, Donna Rhodes, know that an award ceremony would prove to be a celebration of the student's accomplishments as well as her own. When you were there and this news release came out on June the 8th, maybe talk about your reaction to not just the award, but what it means and the impact and what goes on at the Hillcrest School.
I love the Hillcrest School. Some of my best days in this field was first day of school at Hillcrest. I would always go there because I just wanted to connect with the kids. I wanted to welcome the new staff. And that has just been a big, big part of my career with Kenosha County. The Courage to Care Award, it was given at the Hillcrest graduation, which is one of my favorite celebrations of the year, because what Hillcrest does is they honor every single student. We have had, Hillcrest never used to graduate kids. We have been graduating, I say we because I feel a part of the Hillcrest family, I'm sorry. We have graduated more kids each year, and these are kids that many, many people have given up on. These are kids that have come out of incarceration situations. These are kids that have dropped out, and we have had staff from Hillcrest search them down to find them and say, come back in, you're this close to graduating, let's get you graduated. So sitting there at my favorite event of the year, and then they call my name, I could not have been happier, because I have seen the growth at Hillcrest School over the few decades. Hillcrest used to be kind of a dark place, you know, kind of punitive, but now it is a trauma-sensitive therapeutic school that these kids are shown love, and it shows in their behavior, and it shows in their accomplishments.
If you're just joining us here on Education Matters, my guest this morning is Donna Rhodes, and she is Gang Intervention Supervisor for the Kenosha County Division of Children and Family Services. You know, one of the comments made by the principal at Hillcrest was, Donna Rhodes, has always put kids first and has dedicated her life to helping kids and families in crisis. And the principal went on to say, it takes such a strong and dedicated person to not fight or flight when crisis occurs. When the principal said those things about you, what kind of thoughts went through your own head and about what you do, the impact that you have, and just the overall joy that you bring to all the students with whom you work?
When kids are in crisis, they need care. They do not need anyone coming at them harshly. They do not need anyone to turn tail and run. They need to know someone cares. So when I'm at Hillcrest and I see a kid melting down or having a problem, you know, those are the kids I want to walk up and just say, let's take a walk. Let's get out of here. Let's, you know, give them a chance to calm down. don't say anything for a while. You really just have to let kids decompress. And this world is hard on kids. It's hard on all of us. And in a post-pandemic world, we are seeing mental health problems with kids like we have never seen before. And that's why I love the Hillcrest program so much, because they make sure these kids feel cared for. They make sure they connect in the services, whether it is mental health services or services for the family. But they look at that child as a whole, not just the student that walks through that door every day. They want to make sure their lives, their complete lives, are in a good place.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the questions that I want to ask is, are there typical, and I use that word carefully because I'm not sure what is typical nowadays, but are there typical warning signs parents should look for very specifically for their daughters and sons?
Definitely a change in behavior in terms of more sullen, more negative. You want to look for a change in friends. That is a huge one. When suddenly they're not with their, you know, childhood friends, their elementary and middle school group, and you got this new group of kids that you don't know, they don't want you to know, that is a huge red sign. Parents should always know the homes their kids are going to. If your kid is going to spend a night somewhere, find out who's there. Call that other parent, because a lot of times that's the start of getting connected with negative peers if they don't want you to know where they are. If you look for graffiti on their notebooks, on their school books, on their walls sometimes, that's a big sign. Change in physical appearance. A lot of people think gangs wear a lot of colors, and some gangs traditionally do. The Latin Kings are still very traditional, and in terms of their colors, they still wear a very traditional wearing yellow and black, but a lot of the other gangs are not wearing colors anymore. So that's not a huge red flag anymore. But, you know, it used to be if they were leaning to the left with everything, left pants leg up, left eyebrow cut, that sort of thing, or to the right, that's a gang sign. You can see some of that now, but more, I would look more to behavior, friend choices, school performance. If you have a child who formerly did very well in school, or it was at least maintaining in school, and suddenly they're failing or getting suspended more often, you want to look for signs that they could be getting involved with, if not gangs, at least some negative peers.
As you're talking, one of the thoughts that comes into my head is, why are you doing what you're doing? What drives you? What are the forces in your life and your desire and the focus that you have? What are some of the things that give you the ability to do what you do so successfully?
I care, and I want to see kids succeed. And kids know I care. When I left PSG after 20 years, and literally I had my former clients, I'll call them, calling PSG. What do you mean she's not there? She's always been there. I have young people in their 40s now that still reach out to me because I work with them when they were 15 or 16 years old. These kids have to know you care about them. And I want to see every kid succeed. Every kid has potential to be somebody. And if you don't build, if they don't see that potential, it's up to us to help them see that potential. We want to make sure that parents, I can't say it enough, raise strong, resilient children. So that's why we can't forget the parents in all of this. We have a lot of programming nationally that focus on the kid only. But you kill the head, you kill the body. And if we're not putting services with the parent, the head of the family, it's not going to be effective with the kids. So I'm a strong advocate for parent programming and for getting youth and parents involved together in programming.
Mm-hmm. Why and how do youth leave a gang? What are some of the things that get them to get out? And one of the things it says here is commonly repeated that once a person joins a gang, he or she can never get out, the so-called blood in, blood out assertion. How can a young person leave a gang, and what's the process like?
That is a wonderful question, and thank you for asking it, because that is one of the biggest misconceptions, is the blood in, blood out. You know, in South Central California, on the west side of Chicago, that probably is very, very true. But this is Kenosha. There is no blood in, blood out. How kids leave the gang? They get a good job. They get a girlfriend who doesn't want them to hang out with the gang, or get a boyfriend that says, hey, I'm not going to date you if you're in this gang. They get a good job. They get a star of the basketball team or the football team. Suddenly, what happens? You stop hanging out with the gang. Guess what? You're out of the gang. Mm-hmm. No one's going to come looking for you, because sadly, there's always somebody to replace you. So if anyone listening has a child involved in gangs, get them involved in something positive. Because once they're connected with something positive and they are flourishing in that something positive, you will find they will leave those negative peers alone.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned before about also working with parents. What kinds of training and processes do you use in your job and with the school you work with, and just in any capacity, to work with parents to either be more aware of what their own child is doing, or if their child is in a gang, how to work with parents so they can be more influential with their own son or daughter?
Well, first off, prevention-wise, I have been working with KUSD for a number of years facilitating the Active Parenting Program. Pre-pandemic, we did it in person, and it's a six-week program for teens, and then there's a six-week elementary school program. We would have about 8 to 10 families complete the program when we did it in person. So I guess one good thing that came out of the pandemic is, since we've been doing this program virtually, we have not had less than 30 parents participate in this parent training. And if you use the strategies of active parenting, it works. It talks about, you know, having a positive relationship with your child, using the method of choice, building on your child's strengths. And that is something that if you start using this young, it works. I tell people all the time, this stuff works. I recently had a coworker start at the Division of Children and Family Services who attended my class last year. So I walked up and introduced myself, and she said, oh, I know you. I did your class last year. And she told me how she started using the strategies and how it works. So that's one of the things I do in cooperation with KUSD, is offer this active parenting program. And hopefully parents can use those skills to help those build those strong, resilient children. Mm-hmm. In addition, we do have a format we haven't had to use in a number of years, which is a good thing. It's called SOS. It means Save Our Son, Save Our Sister, Save Our Streets. And SOS is a uniform sign for help. So this is, we have a meeting like this when something has happened in the street. You know, we've had a shooting, or we see what the last one we had, we saw an increase in youth armed robberies, that kids were just, you know, with toy guns, playing like they had a gun. But it's scary to people. And these kids had some serious consequences for this. So what we did, we just had a meeting and say, parents, you need to talk to your kids about, you know, not carrying these pretend guns and not, you know, taking someone's stuff as a ha-ha joke, and then next year you're sitting with a felony armed robbery charge. We also have an SOS meeting, you know, anytime there's something big going on in the street that we need to connect with parents, and then we bring parents in and we talk about what the behaviors are, what the alternatives are, and some actual programming that can help their kid.
You're also involved with the Brighter Futures initiatives. And I know that Kenosha County DCFS was awarded a $250,000 grant from the state. Maybe if you can talk a bit about that and about the Girls Circle and also the Aggressive Replacement Training Program.
Sure. BFI is a state funding source that Kenosha County has received for a number of years. About 4 or 5 years ago, they changed it so that it actually had to be applied for a specific purpose. We applied for that. They had a number of grants that year. So we applied and received, I believe, about $400,000 that went into Hillcrest School to support this programming for the youth there. we reapplied a few years later when it came back up, where they decided they were only going to give one grant that year. So Portage County beat us out by 1 point, but they were so impressed with the Kenosha County proposal that they still awarded us the $250,000 to continue the program at Hillcrest School. So some of the programming that the BFI funding supports is the Girls Circle, which is an evidence-based program specifically for girls that have experienced abuse and neglect, domestic violence, dating violence, or witness any of the above. It is an open group that girls can come in at any time, and all girls at Hillcrest School participate in that group. We also have the ART program, the regression replacement therapy. And what I like about that program is just not about anger management. It's about teaching social skills. There's a lot of social skill scenarios that, you know, they do in that program. How to say thank you, how to make a polite request, how to make a phone call requesting information, things that kids may not have learned. And then there's also a section there about moral reasoning. So it'll give you a scenario, and kids have to morally decide which way to go. And so when you combine those two, what it does is it really helps build the skills kids need in order to manage their anger better. PBIS, we support PBIS at Hillcrest School. That is a KUSD-wide initiative. It stands for Positive Behavior Intervention and Supports. It is a format and that everybody in the school works to have a positive behavior in the school and support positive behavior. And that is not just the teachers. That's the dean. That's the janitor. That's the lunch lady. So everybody works under this same philosophy of supporting positive behavior. The Seven Challenges program is also offered at Hillcrest School and supported by the BFI funding. And that is an AODA awareness and prevention program. So just kind of get kids aware of their alcohol and drug use and help them make some decisions about how moving forward to reduce or eliminate that use.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the most exciting thing we put in that grant, I think that tipped us over to get it, even though we were 1 point short, was our school-based counseling. That has just been so great and so supportive to our kids in all KUSD school, but particularly at Hillcrest School, to have a licensed therapy in the building that can meet with these kids, that can troubleshoot with these kids. That has been instrumental in reducing suspensions, as has PBIS, referrals to the office referrals. So I think the combination of these things has helped Hillcrest become just like this super, like I said, it's trauma-informed. It's a very therapeutic school that they're very supportive of the kids. And I think that's why we're seeing more and more kids graduate from there.
Mm-hmm. Maybe if you could talk briefly about Chat and Choose.
Well, and I love Chat and Choose.
C-H-E-W.
Yes.
And not choose,
yeah,
as in chosen.
Right, okay. Right, because it's chat and chew, because we talk and eat.
Okay.
So pre-pandemic, we haven't been able to have any since the pandemic. So I work closely with the KUSD school community relations person, who right now is Lori McDonald, formerly Pat Demas, who retired last year. And we put on what's called a chat and chew, where parents can come and get a meal and hear a presentation. So I have done chat and chew presentations on internet safety, bullying prevention, obviously gang prevention, but also positive things like promoting positive behavior in your youth. So when they call, I answer, and I am welcome to go to any school and talk about some of these things just to educate, keep our parents educated.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, as here we are in June, the show is airing this coming Saturday. It's 95 degrees out right now as we're sitting here in the studio. Maybe if you could talk briefly about the summer youth employment and how that impacts all students, but particularly those who might at some point think about being involved with a gang.
The summer youth employment program has been you cannot say enough about this program and what it does to keep kids out of the youth justice system. It costs $100,000 a year to incarcerate a youth at Lincoln Hill School. This program is $250,000 of county tax levy in which we employ about 145 young people and keep them busy all summer long. We have mentor work sites, and we call it a mentoring work program because the mentoring starts from the time the youth gets the application. It is a referral-based program, which means a social worker, a counselor, a probation officer, someone has to refer you to the program. Once they do, it is up to that person to mentor you to get that application filled out properly, to get the needed documents you need. Then we have a mentoring interview. This is just not, we're not handing kids a job. We're not handing kids free money for the summer. We have a mentoring interview where at the end of that interview, they are given a critique on what they did well and what they could work on in future interviews. The interview is not the determining factor or the way whether kids get into this program. We use it as a tool to teach them how to do an interview so when they go to a job where that interview is going to be the make or break, that they're able to go there and successfully do it.
Mm-hmm.
So this program is built on collaborations. We collaborate with KUSD to have our kids do an employability class, and they do that for 12 hours. And if they complete the employability class, along with 60 hours of work in the program, they earn a half credit towards graduation. We have had instances when that half credit, or if you do the program for 2 years, the whole credit, has made a difference whether a young person graduates or not. We have seen a reduction in juvenile arrests every summer we have run this program because these are at-risk youth. These are youth that, and what we mean by at-risk, they can be gang involved, they can be at risk of gang involvement, delinquent, at risk of delinquency, failing in school, truancy, homeless, disabled. You know, so our definition for at risk is very broad.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do then is these kids are not the kids that we want sitting around all summer. So we keep them busy, we tire them out, we send them home with money in their pocket, and guess what? They are not out at the parties. They are not out stealing bikes. They are not out committing armed robberies. They are not out stealing cars. And that's why we see that reduction. They're feeling good about themselves. They have money in their pocket, and they're tired when they get home at night. So I think that all contributes to the big reduction we see in juvenile arrests over the summer when this program runs.
Donna, in our last 90 seconds, give or take, what kinds of changes would you like to see in your department to make things even better than they are right now?
We need more funding for prevention. Kenosha is so blessed to have many, many intervention programs. When I'm on state meetings and we talk about the programs we have in Kenosha, people are always jealous of what we have. But our programs come in after the fact. We do have a great prevention services network. Let me say that right away. And they do wonderful, wonderful work supporting families and preventing child abuse and neglect and also preventing young people from getting into the youth justice system. We just need more of that. If we can get more programs that target youth younger, that we can get a focus more on mental health and mental health younger, I think we can see a lot of success for our young people.
My last question is one that I always like to ask, and that is there anything that I have not asked you to talk about that I should have?
We covered a lot. No, I think we covered a lot. You know, one thing I think I wanted to just say that we have a lot of collaborations between Kenosha Unified School District and Kenosha County DCFS. It's a wonderful partnership in so many ways. And one of the newest interventions is called the Handle with Care. Because we're trying to be trauma-informed. We have a lot of kids, like I said, struggling with mental health, abuse and neglect. We have a partnership with KUSD where if a young person has a traumatic experience or a very troubling experience at night, we send a notice to the school to handle that child with care. Let that child sleep that, and they may fall asleep in class. They may be a little more anxious in class, but the teacher, the administrator, and everyone has been noticed. This this kid went through something tough last night. Let's handle him very carefully today. And I think that is just being as trauma informed as we can be. And I think that is nothing but would be nothing but helpful to our children at KUSD and in Kenosha County.
Okay, thank you. My guest this morning here on Education Matters, Donna Rhodes, who is Gang Intervention Supervisor for the Kenosha County Division of Children and Family Services. Donna, thank you so much for taking your time to talk to me, but in particular so our audience can know more about what you do and the outstanding work. Thank you so much.
I am very, very pleased to have been here, and thank you very much.
I'd like to thank Donna Rhodes for being my guest this morning here on Education Matters. For Education Matters here on WGTD-HD, I'm Steve Brown. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard Saturday mornings at 10:30 here on WGTD. Archive programs are available on our website at WGTD.org.
This is WGTD-HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights